because I'm going to set you free.
In return, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Call it a squid pro quo. This Angela Abar, she either killed Judd Crawford or she knows who did. Either way, she threatens to disrupt the aforementioned peace.
Hello and welcome to the Cephalo Podcast, where we're discussing the HBO show Watchmen. I'm your host, Scott.
And I'm Jason.
Today we are discussing Season 1, Episode 5, which is entitled Little Fear of Lightning. Anything you want to cover before we just dive right in, Jason?
No, let's just go.
Just drop right in. All right. Episode opens. We see a church group getting off of a school bus. The screen mentions that it's 1984, so this is clearly a flashback. It's a church group, and they are discussing that it's one minute before midnight, that there was big concern about nuclear holocaust during the 80s, you know, especially during the Cold War. So this is a church group going out to evangelize against nuclear armament. We see, we hone in on one character as he's walking through the midway of this carnival. And he walks past a kid reading a comic book. And on the back of the comic book, it says the Veidt Method. And it's what, like a parody of those old like Charles Atlas comic book ads where the guy had huge muscles. So, you know, in this universe, Veidt was, you know, he was a superhero and he was in shape. And apparently his, you know, I don't even know what they would have been selling, you know, bone broth or whatever. Was advertised on the back of this comic book. I just thought it was kind of interesting throwaway to bring Veidt into this. So this main character, or whoever this boy is that we don't know yet, is walking through this midway, and he bumps into some punks, you know, just kids out doing no good, and they basically get in a fight because he tries to, you know, drop church knowledge on them, and they're not having it. So at one point they steal like his little bow tie, and one of the girls leads him into like a mirror funhouse, you know, trying to like diffuse the situation. And she starts flirting with him, and you know, he thinks like maybe he kind of hit the lottery. And she says, "Have you ever had sex with a person?" And then she starts to take his clothes off. And you know, just when, you know, he thinks things are going to, you know, escalate, she takes off running outside. She has all his clothes, and he's left naked inside, standing in front of all these mirrors. Right about then, he realizes it was a trap, and all of the mirrors shatter, and the lights kind of blink on and off. And, you know, there's kind of like this loud noise. You get the impression like a bomb has gone off or something. He walks outside mostly naked, except for his socks, and pretty much everyone outside at this carnival is now dead. He is not. He was inside the building. But he has survived. I did make note that there's a panning shot as it pulls back through this circus, and the Ferris wheel in this the carnival is called the Atomic Wheel. So more references to nuclear power and nuclear weapons. And then as the camera pulls back even farther, we see there's a reveal of New York City proper, and there's a big gigantic squid on top of a building. So clearly this was the squid invasion from the original. And this is sort of just a flashback story of, you know, what happened and how it affected the people. We don't know this at this point, but this certainly turns out to be Looking Glass later. So this is a young Looking Glass, is the naked kid at the circus.
Oh, they didn't reveal that it was him earlier on.
I don't know if they did, if they didn't say his name. It's not super clear. I mean, it's not like they call him Wade or anything in this. Maybe they do. I don't remember. The point is that it's Looking Glass, and this is his origin story. This is where he was on, I forget what day it was, you know, like 9/11 in our universe. It's whatever, November 2nd in this universe was the squid attack. So this is where that comes from.
I guess then, I just kind of put two and two together, because you told me before the episode that you're going to learn more about Looking Glass. So I kind of clued in, I guess. And then like the poster for this episode has him in it. So I figured this was a backstory, but I guess they didn't say that in the text.
Real quick, the next scene we see, there's an ad campaign. They're sort of doing a focus group in this, you know, business office. And the ad campaign is for Return to New York. So clearly New York has kind of been, I want to say, like, you know, Hiroshima or whatever. It was sort of, maybe abandoned is the wrong word, but it was clearly, you know, it was ground zero for the squid attacks. And New York is back up and running because, oh, we cut into the future or cut into present time. So this is 2019. And so they're trying to lure people back to New York. It's a tourism campaign. And there were a couple jokes in the campaign about eating squid, which was funny. What we learned from this scene is that Looking Glass, his day job is essentially he runs focus groups, and his job essentially is he's a human lie detector, kind of. He's able to read in on people's fear, and he's basically advising this ad campaign about whether or not they should move forward with this Return to New York campaign. So it's sort of analogous to him sitting in the pod and grilling those people. He's able to determine, you know, if somebody's lying or telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. So we're still in this, like, focus group scene, I guess, and at the end...
Oh, are we? I thought that was it. Was there more to it?
The guys are looking through the results of it, and they see, like, good scores, but, like, Wade says, no, they hated it, just to kind of confirm, I guess, his like you said, his power, or his ability. So I guess that was it for that, but we still continue to follow him out. After that, he goes to a storage unit and grabs his mask, and then we cut to a meeting with the police force, and Lori Blake is the FBI agent leading this assembly, and she says that they need to find the image of this like church that's in the video that the 7th Cavalry sent as sort of their terrorist demand video, I think from like the first episode. So that's the mission directive here, is to like search all the churches in Oklahoma. She says there can't be more than like 5,000, right? So after that, we go to like the office area in the police, and Red Scare is asking Glass about the difference between like church styles, and Glass asks him if he's using lettuce from the Calvary shooting on his sandwich, and Red Scare says, "Yeah, it was gonna go bad." So,
you're like, no big deal. We're using this lettuce from a murder investigation, no less.
Yeah, you'd think that'd be in evidence, I guess. I don't know. So Angela enters and pulls him aside to ask about the pills. Lori then comes out, calls for Glass to come into her office. Wade goes into the office. Lori says he can take off the mask. They argue a bit, but then he relents and rolls it up. She asks about his experience with the event, like his experience in the blast zone. Usually have a lot of trauma, but he says, oh, I sleep great. So he's kind of covering up for his obvious trauma.
Yeah, real quick, they get in an argument about whether or not he should be wearing his mask inside the precinct. Because Lori's like, well, I know who you are. You can take your mask off. There's no reason to wear this mask. And his response is, the regs say to keep him on inside the precinct. So even the police in this universe, they have rules about their keeping their identities private, even with their coworkers.
Yeah, so Lori says with the masks, he has an excuse to wrap his head in reflectatine, which, quote, guarantees protection from psychic blasts. She asks about his day job as a market researcher, then says he can leave. But before he leaves, she says she bugged his cactus and asks about the pills. So she overheard the conversation with Angela. He says it's a personal issue between sister and himself, and it would be a violation of her medical privacy to divulge it. So that gets him out of that situation.
The one thing that is worth noting in that scene is that Looking Glass, or I think Lori tells him or asks him, Looking Glass joined the police after the White Knight happened. So he knew about all these police getting slaughtered, and I guess you could say he stepped up to the plate and he was like that, and decided to become a police officer in lieu of everything happening with the White Knight. It didn't scare him away, I guess I should say.
Yeah, okay. Didn't catch that. So, yeah, we continue to follow him even more. He's at home going through mail. He sees a letter from Cynthia Tillman, shakes his head. We don't really know what's going on there, I guess, or at least I didn't.
We do know that his last name is Tillman. He's Wade Tillman. I think that's come up. So you can infer that this is some relation to him.
Yeah. So we see him take off his hat. And it has reflectatine in the inner liner of the hat. And he puts his regular mask on. And so this explains why he's wearing his mask in his house in that other scene, which didn't make sense to me. Because he wants the protection from the reflectatine. He's watching some superhero man-on-man porn, looks like.
Did you catch who it was?
No, I don't think
you
were, so.
You didn't watch the gay porn that close?
No. it looks like Hooded Justice is one of them.
Yeah, so Hooded Justice is taking, let's see, who was it? It was Captain Metropolis. Yeah, so Hooded Justice is taking Captain Metropolis from behind. Captain Metropolis is an obscure character from the original comic. But Hooded Justice is definitely in this universe. We already saw that, little side story with him. So it's not super important who they are, but it's just more that, hey, Wade's got some spare time and he decided to watch gay, like, superhero fanfic porn.
That is, that's weird because we know he's not gay, right? I mean, he's definitely has...
He's got an ex-wife, so...
Even in this episode, but... okay, that's something. So he hears an alarm go off, and he runs to his shelter and hits a button. Looks like it was like a drill to test his timing because he looks at like a timer clock. But then the alarm goes off again, and he can't turn it off. So he goes into his closet and has trouble turning it off. So he busts it down and kicks it until it stops. And then he's on a phone with tech support demanding they replace it. He orders another unit and hangs up the phone. Obviously, he's very paranoid about like psychic or another attack of some sort. He pulls his mask on and goes to sleep in his bunker.
You got it. Yeah.
Hmm.
So what we know is that he lives alone. And that he, apparently runs his own some sort of drill, and he has this fallout shelter that he is pretty enamored with. And he was not very excited about the idea of not having this alarm. Mm-hmm. So much so that I think, doesn't he say... doesn't he call the company and they're like, well, we could overnight it to you, but it's going to cost as much as the unit is itself. And he was like, I don't care. He's like, just get it to me.
Yeah.
So he's very, he needs to have this alarm. I think what I took away from this scene is, so he's a doomsday prepper. He's got a bunker, and he's got equipment and food and weapons and crap in there. And I'm learning that he has PTSD, most likely from the squid assault, because he was at essentially ground zero when it went off. And perhaps this is why he has this underground shelter is a way to protect himself from the squids should they come again. What we see, it cuts to another scene where we see a group of kids and there's another focus group about a breakfast cereal, and Wade is consulting for that as well. So, he does more than just a New York ad campaigns. And then we see him walk into a pet cloning facility, and he's there to see his old girlfriend. He's there to see her ex-wife, I guess. I mean, he calls her his ex. I don't know if they're ever married or not. Well, I guess they must have been if she had his last name. Anyway, this is the lady that he had given Sister Knight's pills to investigate. And she is there cloning a puppy. And I think at one point she says, does this puppy look exactly like this other puppy? And he was like, oh no, the other one's bigger. And Cynthia just walks over to this incinerator, drops the puppy and hits this button. And this little puppy gets incinerated. She's essentially like, okay, well, back to the drawing board. I got to clone this puppy again. She tells him that she's evaluated the pills that Angela had and that the pills are nostalgia. And she says, aren't those banned? And she says, also sure they're outlawed because it turns out putting memories into pill form led to psychosis. So we know that these pills are called nostalgia, and somehow these pills contain memories, and they are now outlawed because it's just not a good idea. So we're learning a little bit more about these pills that Will had. So why and I don't know if you remember in the original that when Sister Knight first arrests him, she asks what the pills are, and he says, they help me keep my memories, if I remember right. And now we learn that they are nostalgia.
Like literally memories, yeah.
Yes, right, potentially. And as they're leaving, I think Cynthia says, you know, why didn't it work out between us? You know, I thought we had a good thing going. And didn't they date for, or they were going out for 7 years, I think. And Wade responds that, well, he has seven years of bad luck for all those mirrors that broke around him as part of the squid fall. So
she says, she spent 7 years trying to convince him she wasn't going to steal his clothes and leave him naked. Like the trauma he has, and then
there you go.
Yeah, that's what he says. 7 years of bad luck. So I didn't really understand that, I guess, but it has to do with like the broken mirrors and stuff.
And I mean, that's what I assume. Yeah, it was. I mean, he says 7 years bad luck. He doesn't reference the mirrors, but I mean, that's kind of common knowledge that 7 years bad luck is related to mirrors. So I assume he thinks he still has bad luck from that when it happened back when he was a kid.
Right.
You want to talk about the Squid PTSD support group?
Oh, yeah, of course. So we're continuing to follow Wade. This is a very Wade-focused episode, obviously.
Well, you said you wanted to learn more about Wade, right?
I did, and I'm
getting it.
I'm getting what I asked for. No, it's really interesting to see this all this stuff kind of fall in place. It makes a lot of sense. I really like to see this stuff in characters and kind of know where they're coming from. So that when I see weird things, I can actually start to come up with reasons in my head. But like for the first, you know, four episodes, I'm seeing a lot of actions of this character that just feel like they're purposely out of left field. It's a style of show that's interesting, and I guess I'm appreciating more as we get further into it. So yeah,
we can talk more about the style at the end once more of it's wrapped up. It's definitely stylistically the way he likes to tell stories is present a lot of things out of left field that don't make any sense and then come back and explain them. I mean, that was what Lost tried to do. It was what The Leftovers tried to do. That's clearly his style. So
yeah. Yeah. Although Lost had a lot of backstory in the episodes, it was very focused on showing backstory as we move along with these characters. Well, the situation with the island, okay, we can get into it later, but I think there's a difference with that.
There's definitely a difference. This was very clearly designed to be a mystery that wraps up, and I think Lost on purpose was a mystery that was left open, and that was not what people wanted. You're right. They're very different stories. It's a similar storytelling. I think that's just a hallmark or a fingerprint of his type of storytelling.
Yeah. So Wade goes to like it looks like a church at night, and it sort of has the scene of a typical like AA meeting or like support group, and he puts out some pamphlets that I think they say extra dimensional anxiety. And it appears he's like kind of one of the organizers or maybe the leader of it. A person is talking about like generational trauma and how he wasn't born until 10 years after the event, but he like inherited his mom's pain. A woman walks in. Wade asks, are you a friend of Nemo's? She shakes her head yes, and he says, welcome aboard. Wade then goes into a supportive speech about how it brought us together and it prevented nuclear war. He says every tunnel ends with light, and he will show them how it ends. He's looking at the new woman, making eye contact. Afterwards, the woman is standing outside smoking a cigarette, and Wade meets up with her. She says she doesn't believe that he's not afraid. He's not out of the tunnel, so to speak. They have a weird conversation, but then she says, follow me. And he's kind of a little taken aback, but he does it. He follows her in their cars, and they end up at a bar talking about like Vietnam and having a good time. Yeah.
So before we go past the scene a little bit, there, one of the, and I don't know, I don't think they gave names of the characters, but the black guy at the AA meeting, or the PTSD support group meeting, says, I don't want to end up one of those fucking nutters with my head wrapped in that magic tin foil. So he's referring to the reflectatine, and actually I think it cuts to the inside of Wade's red hat is actually lined with reflectatine too. So even at this support group, like, they kind of acknowledge like that this is an abnormal behavior, and they make mention of reflectatine sort of being a, I guess, like a crutch, you know, sort of like, I guess, you know, those people that wear those copper bracelets that say help them with arthritis. Like, this is just a thing that goes on in this universe, is that reflectatine is like the safety blanket for some of these people.
So it's not, it doesn't have any real scientific basis.
I don't know. I don't know if they actually say or not. I don't know if it ever actually comes up.
Yeah, I assume it. Well, yeah, it's like one of those like magnetic, like bracelets that.
Yeah, right. That kind of stuff
to achieve chi balance, or it's literal tinfoil hat, basically.
Essentially, yeah. And what Wade says at the end of that scene is, he says he's trying to convince these people that there is light at the end of this tunnel, that you're not going to be miserable your whole life. And then he says, then that enormous tentacled abomination teleported into New York. If it hadn't arrived when we did, we would all be ash. It united us against a common threat. So from Wade's point of view, he was really worried about just getting nuked, like the whole world was going to end. So he's telling everybody that, hey, I'm glad the squids came because they prevented us from nuking each other. But clearly deep down, he's got, you know, some squid tentacle, you know, PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, now it cuts to the bar scene, and they are... What's the girl's name? Does she have a name?
I actually never caught it, yeah.
I don't know if she has a name or not. I called her Abby because that was her character on the other show that she's on. So, they're at a bar, and he's trying to convince him that she doesn't believe him, right?
Yeah. First, I think he says that he is a market researcher, talks about his job, and then says his talent is telling if people can lie. And she says, oh, well, I'm a waitress. I can't remember she says like a few different vocations, and he's like, yeah, that's bullshit, until she says she's like a radiologist, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, that's right. So kind of proving, testing his ability, and he's showing it off a little bit. And then he convinces her to talk about her trauma, you know? And she says it's like stupid, but she eventually talks about it being about a movie about a little, like, The Pale Horse is what it's called. And I guess it's a movie about the squid event, sort of like a Schindler's List.
Yeah, it's, in this universe, it's actually directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And legit, in the comic, the band that was going to play when the squids hit was called Pale Horse. There's a big shot in the comic of like a squid on a building, and there's like a poster on the side of it that says, you know, Pale Horse playing tonight. So there was a big concert scheduled in New York for that night called Pale Horse, which is what this Steven Spielberg movie is called.
So it's a different version of Schindler's List.
Yes, essentially.
She describes it as all black and white, but the girl is wearing a red coat, which is exactly what happens in Schindler's List. There's the whole movie is black and white except for one scene with a girl wearing red.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I've never seen Schindler's List. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
So like straight up, yeah, obviously a reference to that. And she says something funny, which is, she's kind of scared all the time, and the squid fall, the squid, little squid fall rain stuff freaks her out. But the only time she isn't losing her mind is when she's watching that movie or fucking.
And like Wade perks up. He's like, wait, what? Tell me more.
And they laugh. she says he's cute, but should call a friend to drive home. So she calls a ride. They meet outside and she's smoking a cigarette. They kiss. And Wade says she was right. He's not out of the tunnel. Her ride pulls up and she gets in and it's a truck that drives away. The truck hits a bump and some lettuce falls out the back, which evokes something that happened in the first episode. So Wade calls in to dispatch to check and confirms that they never recovered the truck from the cavalry shooting in the first episode, which had the lettuce. So he follows the truck to an abandoned department store. He calls for backup on his radio. He sees some people exit the truck with Rorschach masks. And after that is when he calls it in. It's presumably the girl and her ride that exit. So he checks the truck out and finds the lettuce and a big revolver in the truck. He stealthily infiltrates the store and investigates a room that looks like the church from the video that the police are looking for. Suddenly, there's a flash of blue light, a sound of like electric zaps, and a basketball falls from midair and bounces a couple of times right behind him.
It totally had like a blue portal vibe from Portal, right? Like a portal appears and something comes out of it.
Yeah, it was like it just came out of thin air. A Rorschach dude comes out and like checks the ball, like he's expecting it, and kind of writes down some coordinates or whatever. He follows the dude over to what looks like a portal, and a bunch of Rorschach dudes are throwing basketballs into it. Wade cocks his gun and yells, "Nobody move!" And tells them to turn off the portal. The girl tells him to calm down, the girl he met earlier, still with the Rorschach mask on. He tells him to calm down, lower the gun. Wade sees a guy behind him and starts blasting, but the gun apparently is loaded with blanks.
I mean, it's worth noting that Looking Glass is outnumbered. I guess he's Wade at this point. He doesn't have his mask on. He's outnumbered, like, what, 14 to 1?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a not very smart move to just go in there guns blasting by himself. Yeah. I don't know.
Yep.
I guess he's pretty freaked out because he's seen this portal. He knows what it is. We learn later what it is. And so maybe that's the reason he's not thinking so clearly. He just really wants it to shut off. So I don't know. Yeah. You mentioned that he's like way outnumbered. It seems, you know, not super smart to do that, but she says they boosted his walkie-talkie, so his backup isn't coming, and says this is the only way to show him the truth. A couple guys forcibly take him into a room with a chair, sitting in front of a bunch of TVs, and another Rorschach guy sits down next to him and says,
so the whole thing was a trap to get him to lead him to this place. I think at one point she even says, we rigged the lettuce to fall off the truck.
Right. Yes.
Her whole interaction with him tonight was to lure him on, to get him excited and to get him to this warehouse. The whole thing tip to tail.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to go from here, that's fine.
Sure. And then, so what we see is Abby, again, I don't know what her real name was. I'm calling her Abby because that's what she was in the other show, says that the point was that they wanted to show Wade the truth. And they sit him next to this, you know, wall of monitors. And we hear a voice explaining to him, you know, what's happening and how he has no reason to be afraid. And then at one point, I think Wade says, are you even going to try and cover your voice up, Senator Keene? And he was like, oh, I forgot I was wearing this mask. And he takes the mask off. And it's Senator Keene, wearing a Rorschach mask. So that's a pretty huge reveal, right? Because they're clearly a terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that, you know, hey, don't freak out. You know, we're not trying to recreate the squid invasion. You know, we're not horrible racists. Actually, what we're trying to do is we're trying to stop more invasions. They're trying to understand the portal technology. They're trying to learn more about it so they can stop any future invasions. Or at least that's what Keen says.
Well, no, doesn't he say they're going to do something crazy new with it? Like, you know, he asks if they're going to do the same thing. And he says, no, we're going to do something new. It seems more like they're going to do some new terrorist attack with it. But
yes. Okay. I don't want to give too much away. They are experimenting with these portals. He tells Wade that they're trying to stop more invasion. That's the reason that he has this. Wade says it was a CX-924 teleportation window, just like the ones they were playing around with at the Institute for Transdimensional Studies. Wade knew exactly what it was. So he's clearly, I assume, had some sort of experience with this as a cop or as a Squidfall enthusiast, and it puts him on alert. Senator Keen says, well, we've got you in a, you know, we kind of got you in a bad spot because there's 14 of us and we're armed and you're nothing. So he says, I need a favor from you. He says, actually, what he says is, I need a squid pro quo favor. He basically asks Wade, I need you to implicate Angela Abar in the murder of your boss. I need to get the heat off of me. You already know there's enough going on with Angela. Maybe just, you know, push Lori in that direction.
Well, it's more like, it sounds like she just threatens to disrupt the peace. He says he doesn't really anything about himself, like put the heat off of himself. So maybe revealing something, but yeah.
He's concerned that Angela is getting to the truth. But it's not.
Okay.
I don't want to go too much. The point is that he ultimately, you know, they've got Wade, you know, in a compromising position. He says, you can press play and you can finally be free. You know, and he gives him, I think he puts a DVD in and then he hits play. And what we see is it's Adrian Veidt. It's the Adrian Veidt that we know from, you know, the other scene, which is, and he's congratulating Robert Redford on his election. And this video was recorded way in the past. And Adrian Veidt is saying, well, congratulations, Robert Redford. If you're seeing this, then my plan has worked. And he basically said, hey, you're only president because I put things in motion 10 years ago to make this happen. And then right there on the video, Veidt admits to the squid attack. An elaborate, meticulously engineered hoax to save the world. So he explains what he was doing and that since the squid has fallen, he has thrown his, you know, Veidt brain power behind getting Robert Redford elected because he's just a big fan of Redford's politics. He thinks that he can lead them out of this nuclear, you know, disarmament phase. So what we're seeing here is a flashback. I think it was 10 years. It would have been... Anyway, the point is that Veidt admits what he's done. So that we now know that people in this universe know, at least a very select few of them, know that the squid attack was perpetuated by Veidt. And that Veidt is continuing his power or his influence to get Robert Redford elected.
Yeah, this is like
anything else.
A total. I mean, I may be overreaching, but this is like a total right wing, like liberal fantasy, or like the elite liberal control using fear and like manipulating politicians behind the scene. I mean, this is like a pretty like this is definitely feeding into the kind of right-wing fear of like elite liberal control of things. It's definitely evocative of that, I thought.
Yeah, I think. Sure. Yeah, I can see that. Is there anything else in this particular scene? Because it ends right after Veidt admits to the squid attack and Wade is just kind of completely flabbergasted. Like, is this real? Like, what does this mean? Like,
Yeah. So, in the video, he says he has like several more hours of like of evidence to like describe and build trust between him and Robert Redford, I guess, which we don't get to see, but that would have been kind of interesting to see. But it just cuts away from that.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about, so the next scene is, or you want me to talk about it? We see Veidt and the catapult. I want you to talk about this one.
Okay.
Just because this is crazy. I want to see what you take away from it.
I'm confused, but so we're like most episodes, at near the end when we've kind of reached like a big climax, we cold cut to this weird alternate dimension with Veidt, different timeline, different dimension. We don't really know anything. They're stirring something in a cauldron. Veidt puts on an armored suit, with some like what appears to be like oxygen tubes. And he sits on the catapult. So this appears to be like the end result of his testing. He's gonna do it himself this time rather than launch dead bodies. And he gets launched into space. So he goes into the clouds and then kind of goes, and then suddenly he's in space. And then he lands, you know, softly on what looks like the moon to me. But it's more
he lands softly because he lands softly because there's no gravity, or there's very low gravity, right?
If it's the moon, then it would be, yeah, very low gravity.
Wherever he is very different than, you know, where he was with the castle.
Yeah,
but it can't be that far away because he's tethered by a physical piece of rope, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would be the distance between Earth and the moon, but this is what it's kind of evoking. Like he's going, he's on the moon, so who the heck knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a bunch of dead bodies, like hundreds, it looks like,
mm-hmm.
from previous clone launches. He grabs one of the Mr. Phillips corpses and then starts like moving the bodies around. He starts breaking the body parts apart. They're like frozen, and arranging them into words. And I think there's a satellite that it zooms into, and you can see the reflection off the satellite, which has a camera in it. And then you can see the words saying "save me" and then "D," mm-hmm. but you can't see the rest of it.
So Veidt, he's looking for this satellite. Like he's like, I think at one point he says, "There you are."
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he mm-hmm. may have been planning this the whole time. Like he specifically and purposefully launched all these bodies up so he'd have enough to spell out what he wanted to say. Suddenly he's pulled back in his dimension, kind of out of thin air, and he's on the ground level. He awakes with a bunch of clones standing around him, and then the game warden, quote-unquote, on his horse approaches, says he violated the rules of his letter, and Adrian is having trouble with his helmet. The game warden stabs his helmet and then takes off the helmet. It looks like he kills him, but it really he's just taking off the helmet. He says, "You're under arrest by the power vested in him as the warden of these lands." I kind of wanted to repeat what he says there because I don't know who he is. I just wanted to get the words correct. Like, he's the warden of these lands,
mm-hmm.
and he's under arrest, and he says, like, "May God have mercy on your soul," or something like that. And Adrian says he's pathetic and his God left him.
What he said, what the warden says is, "Master Adrian Veidt, by the power vested in me as warden of these lands, I place you under arrest. May God have mercy on your soul." And, you know, Veidt is just kind of being a jerk and he's not having any of it. And the warden says, "No mercy it is."
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, Adrian, like, says he's pathetic and his God left him. And the warden agrees. He's like, "Yes, I guess our God did leave us. So let's not have mercy and start kicking you a bunch, I guess." So maybe there is, like, this reference to a god of some sort is actually a reference to something rather than just a metaphorical reference. But that's all I mean, again, it's really weird. We learn a lot about what's going on in the rest of the episode, but this is, you know, just more weirdness. We don't learn anything new. It doesn't seem like it just,
we're almost done with the episode. I want to talk more about this. I want to talk about your interpretation of this particular scene, but let's get through the rest of it and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
The next thing we see is Wade doing another focus group for Mercy Perfume. And it's another super quick cut before he goes back to police headquarters. I guess it's just showing him having a day job. So this is all post him learning about Veidt and the 7th Cavalry. He has since been let go, and he is going about his daily life. He's doing his day job and his night job, and as far as we know, things are A-okay with Wade, right?
Well, yeah, there's a shot of him like kind of staring into space as he's listening to the focus group. So it gives you the impression that he's very, this information really has affected him deeply. Yeah.
What we see Panda and Red Scare, and they're like walking through the police department, and they're debating whether or not the Hooded Justice was Dr. Manhattan, because you never see Hooded Justice with his mask off. That's kind of Hooded Justice's deal, is he had a secret identity that no one knew. We actually learn more about it later. But it's just funny that they're debating like time periods, like, well, Dr. Manhattan wasn't alive back then. Well, he could have teleported. He could have done whatever. He's Dr. Manhattan. We see Wade, I think, is sitting at his desk, just kind of like you said, a little shell-shocked maybe. Sister Knight calls him on the phone and asks him about the pills. And Looking Glass responds, just tell me, is anything true? And so he's clearly going to confront Angela about, you know, perhaps having something to do with Judd's death, and he's clearly still processing the squid thing. She walks over and she's like, what are you talking about? And he tells her, these pills are nostalgia. And Sister Knight responds, they're memories? ? And she explains, you know, where the pills came from. She's talking about Will. She says, he was at the tree. He said he killed Crawford, but he's 100 years old. It's not possible. So I covered it up. So she's admitting, you know, to him that these pills are not hers. You know, she's giving him a little bit more of the story.
And they really kind of show the cactus, and she really kind of leans into the cactus, it seems like.
Oh, really? I missed that. Really
kind of giving herself up. I thought, at this point, I kind of thought she knew about the cactus, because she like kind of really leans over it and starts talking into it, but probably not. It just happened to work out nicely. So
the scene ends with, you know, Lori, I think Wade apologizes to Sister Knight. She says, for what? And then Lori comes in and yells, cuff her, you know, and she basically gets surrounded by all these cops. He tells her that, you know, I had to tell Lori, I had to betray you. You know, there was just too much evidence against you, especially in light of these pills. Like, clearly something really sketchy is going on. You're lying to me about Will and being your grandfather. And so he's told Lori. They get all these cops around her, and they're going to, you know, do whatever, take her to cop jail. And she takes the pills that are, I think, sitting on the desk, and she opens the bottle, and she takes the entire bottle at one time, dry. So my interpretation was that she wanted to make sure that the pills didn't fall into Lori's hands or the, you know, FBI's hands. So she was just trying to, in essence, destroy her grandfather's evidence. And so she does that by taking the whole bottle of pills, and then the cops drag her out of the precinct. And that's the last we see of her in this episode.
Oh, so I thought she did that so she could understand what the memory was in the pills.
That's entirely possible. I mean, that's ultimately what ends up happening, not to ruin the next episode, is that it explains while all the memories come back to Angela.
So if you take these pills, you get a specific memory, like even someone else's memory.
Yes. We'll talk about it later in the next episode. I don't want to go into too much details. If I remember right, these are Veidt pills, and it's not important that these are Veidt pills, but I believe Veidt made pills called Nostalgia, and it was never explained in the comic. I think it was just like kind of like an ad on the street kind of thing. So I think this is a play on that. I'm not entirely sure. But the point is that you're able to distill, I don't know, I want to say physical memories, but they're not really physical. You're able to just distill memories into a pill form that one could then take and re-remember that scenario. So
yeah, that's a cool idea.
Hence the name nostalgia, right? And yeah. if you remember, basically at the end of the last episode, wasn't it the last one? When Lady True and Will are sitting around in her vivarium talking, and Lady True says, I think, or Will is being cutesy with the pills instead of just telling Angela his story. Will replies, is that why you're doing the same thing to your daughter? So we're learning a little bit more about these pills. So Will had these pills, and the implication was that he was just taking them because they were heart medicine or whatever. But he has these pills, and he knew that Angela would get them. And I think he interpreted the fact that when she finds out that I'm her grandfather, maybe she'll take these pills and she'll remember some more things. Again, that's a lot of projection into the next episode when we see how the pills work. But that's essentially what they are, is pills that help you remember things. I can't remember what his exact line was. I think it was keep my memory. Yeah. Will asks for the pills, and he says, helps me keep my memory, was the words that he used. The episode ends with a quick scene. Wade, after betraying Angela, pulls into his garage. He sees the alarm on the gravel in his driveway that he had overnighted for $8 bajillion. He picks it up and takes it over to the trash can and slams it in the trash can because he is reformed. He is no longer afraid of squids. He doesn't need this alarm. He realizes that it was all a Vite plot, and the whole thing was fake. So he's cured. He walks away. I think he comes back like 4 seconds later and pulls the squid alarm out of the box and walks in the house. He's clearly still, reeling from this revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And the very last thing we see is a van pull up, like kind of a nondescript van. A bunch of 7th Cavalry dudes jump out. They are all armed, shotguns and whatnot. I think there's 5 or 6 of them and one Wade, and they head inside or head towards Wade's house. And then it fades out, and we see a black screen, and the music is Some Enchanted Evening, You May See a Stranger. And that's the end of the episode. So we end with the 7th Cavalry probably looking to beat the crap out of Wade. Angela having taken a bunch of pills that we don't know what is going to happen with. And
wait, why would the 7th Cavalry come after him at that point?
They are not happy with something that he did.
But he did kind of what they asked, right?
He did. He did exactly what they asked. So yeah. there's more to it. So we'll see in the next episode why they are unhappy with him and how it ends up for Wade. Okay. So what I want to talk about, so the big reveal on this episode, well, I mean, we learned what the pills are, so that's probably the biggest reveal. But the second biggest reveal is the Vite and the catapult where he launches himself into space. So I'm curious, what do you think now? Because up until this point, I didn't know when I was watching it the first time. We didn't know that Vite was existing. I guess we still don't. We don't know if he's existing in the same timeline as Wade and Angela are. Because the castle that he's in has very crude amenities. There's no electricity. Or there's very little electricity. There's very little running water. You know, it's all horses and typewriters, right? But what we see is he launches himself into, I guess, space. And he lands on, like you said, what appears to be the moon with low gravity. And there are, all those corpses that he's been catapulting into nowhere. Oh, one thing we forgot to talk about. So he's on the moon. He's arranging all these bodies. And it says, save me, D. And then he gets yanked back. So they pull the rope back. And I was expecting, and I think the audience is expecting, that he is going to, fall out of the sky and land on the ground, from up in the atmosphere and kill himself, and get crushed. But that's not what happens. Do you remember? It's pretty quick. Do you know what happens?
Yeah, he ends up in, the forest. He comes out of thin air, ground level, in, a foresty area, or on the edge of a forest. That's it. I mean, and he's like really frozen. His pipes aren't working. His oxygen mask isn't working. I mean, is there anything more than that?
No. So what happens is he gets pulled back on this rope, and it's almost sort of like a portal. You know, I want to say like the one the 7th Cavalry had, but not quite exact. He sort of like beams transparently, horizontally through the forest, you know, out of thin air, essentially, and then he falls 5 feet onto the ground or whatever. So it's not like he falls 100 feet out of the sky and breaks his neck is what I'm getting at. But also he, you know, sort of goes through some sort of like teleportation or time warp thing. And it's definitely not explained what that is. So again, we don't know exactly what time period he's in. We don't know exactly where he is, but we're given a couple more clues here. So I'm curious if you have any, and I didn't see it the first time when he's arranging all the bodies, it says save me. And then on the far right, there's a D. Do you have any guesses about what the D would be?
No, I had no idea or had no guesses until just now. I thought maybe it's Dr. Manhattan, because that's like kind of the obvious one. That would be my best guess.
Yeah. Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to note. Yes, you're absolutely that's a good guess for sure.
Isn't Dr. Manhattan living on the moon, or is it Mars?
He's on Mars. He's on the red planet. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's not the moon.
It's worth noting that in this universe, a lot of people call Dr. Manhattan a god. I mean, he has godlike powers. So when the warden is, you know, laying out his decree, he says, "Master Adrian Veidt, by the power vested in me as warden of these lands, I place you under arrest. May God have mercy on your soul." There's a possibility he may be referring to Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, that thought had occurred to me.
And not, you know, capital G God. Well, we can talk about that when we get a little bit farther. Hmm. So that's it. Okay, so D for Dr. Manhattan. That's a good guess. Did you catch the D at first, or did you have to like... Because again, the first time I watched it, I didn't notice it because it's quick.
Yeah, I caught the D, but it didn't occur to me to think it would be Dr. Manhattan until just now.
Okay.
When I'm forced to think about a word that's obvious and starts with D, and that would be Dr. Manhattan.
There are definitely, which would make sense because they were friends, right? I mean, he was...
Well, he's probably the most famous character in this universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
Anything that this weird and complicated starts to make me think that Dr. Manhattan has created it, because he can create lots of weird crap. I remember he, in the comic, like he created this palace or something on the moon, and this fortress of solitude of sorts, you know, so it's possible he could create all of these clones. He could create this whole weird scenario for Adrian Veidt as sort of a punishment, I would think, maybe because they, like you said, they really disagreed on his plan or about the squid and stuff. Okay. So that's where my mind goes.
Sure. So. No, that's a totally good guess. It's the thing you need to take away from this scene is there is absolutely more to that word, and it definitely comes back. So the point is that Dr. Manhattan is sending a message, or sorry, not Dr. Manhattan, that Veidt is sending a message to someone. He was looking for that satellite. He expected it to be there. He arranged all these bodies in a clear message so that the satellite would see them and that perhaps he can get some help.
Yeah.
And then let's see. I mean, that's pretty much what we take away from this. And then, so there's just two big, cliffhangers in this episode. You know, what's going to happen to Angela, and where's Veidt? Because clearly he is on the move now. Do you have your list of questions? Have we answered any of them? I mean, you got a little bit more backstory about Wade and his squid PTSD.
Yeah, that was actually a question I kind of gave up. I said I had given up on, because, and I just thought, oh, we're just going to, this guy's just going to be a mystery. But yeah, we learned a lot about his background. His underground lab, studying the squid rain was a question of mine. So that still kind of lingers. But I guess, you know, obviously he's very paranoid about everything. And he's obviously very affected by the squid stuff and the psychic damage stuff. Him learning about the hoax, so to speak, is a big reveal for me, that's probably the biggest reveal for me, is just sort of the inner workings of the government. Because Keene says when he's elected senator, this is something he was shown on some committee he was assigned to. So this tells me that the inner workings of the government are very weird. There's a lot going on with the government and Adrian Veidt, or at least the squids, and using this as control to keep the peace and prevent, like, so to speak, prevent nuclear war. I mean, that was kind of the biggest reveal for me. But sure. I mean, the brutal cloning veterinarian clinic, I mean, that's a new question that didn't really need to be asked. Did it? Where they just incinerate dog clones?
Innocent dogs. I don't think that comes up. I don't think that's explained. You're just going to have to accept it for what it is. In this universe, you can get your clones, your pets cloned, and if they're not good, then they get destroyed.
The looking glass into masked man-on-man action, that's also a new question.
Yeah.
But the as far as like Adrian Veidt, the pocket watch part of it didn't. It's still a big question, I guess. The pocket watch being a big element previously. You mentioned that, you know, may or may not be like a time portal. I didn't really think of it as like time travel or anything. But
we still don't know. I guess we do know that he's not in ancient times. He hasn't been teleported into the past where they have castles, because wherever he gets out of, when he ends up on the moon, there's a modern-day satellite. So we're getting a little bit more about, you know, maybe where he is and where in time he is. Because, I mean, theoretically, he should be, you know, Veidt at the age he is. I mean, he should be that age in Laurie's timeline. So they should exist in the same universe, but the set pieces that they're, you know, living in are very different. So I believe it's the next episode we find out exactly what's going on. So we will definitely get there.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, we learned a lot, but I mean, obviously I have a whole list of questions about Lady True, the Millennium Clock, you know.
It's all coming. This is very much like the very middle of the season, right? This is episode 5 and there's 9 episodes, so this is about as middle as it gets, so.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't want to go into too much more, but that was a great episode. We get a lot of little things revealed, and it only gets better from here. Anything else to close on?
No. I like to see more character development. I appreciate that, and I think maybe it's kind of like a good turning point for me to like start to understand the characters more. And that for me, it's about the characters. And storytelling really has to center around that for me to like kind of identify with what's going on. So I feel like, the show is really getting to that satisfactory point where, and it's fulfilling that part for me. So yeah, that's about it.
Okay, good. All right. Well, we'll talk about episode 6 in probably another week.
Cool.
All right. Signing off.